Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is a low-limit player who posts under the name of Prozima. Prozima, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Richard. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Thanks for being here. First of all, tell us how you got started in the gambling world.
Well, when I was a kid, my house was relatively accepting of gambling. We used to, you know, have little penny poker games. So I learned poker at a fairly young age after junior high school. We'd come back and, you know, sometimes just play with chips or you know, win whatever we had left from our lunch money. But, you know, my dad never would let me win. He liked winning too. As a matter of fact, it took me until I was 30 years old to beat him at Scrabble, and then he blamed the other guy we were playing with. But,
that's a good father. I think that's a well training just to, make sure that you keep getting good enough. If you want to win, well, get good enough so you do.
Well, and it got to a point where I could hang with the adults, mostly by being, you know, nitty, a type player, right? Figuring out if I have cards, it's time to play. But, you know, I had an uncle that would come over for those games, and he'd try and teach me some basic strategy, blackjack. I wasn't into it at the time, but, at least I knew it was out there and it existed. But, you know, that's was my first experience with gambling, probably, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old.
Yeah, being in the Midwest where it snows all in the winter, people tend to stay indoors. And, you know, when I grew up, every family gathering ended up with pinochle or some kind of game that my father and grandparents were playing for money. So, yeah, I think people get exposed very young and at least back where it's cold and people tend to play more games, it seems.
Yeah, other than, poker, we played rummy, right? We played any number of different card games, right? I mean, it was just how you killed a Saturday night when you were a kid, you know?
Right.
And then, you learned if grandma raises, just everybody fold, you know?
Because she's nittier than you.
She's nittier than me, right? She was not bluffing.
Uh-huh. And if you had a big hand when grandma did too?
Grandma usually had a monster when grandma raised.
Uh-huh. Good to know. I'll be looking out for grandma.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, local casino opened. You were 19 with fake ID.
Yeah, so that was a good time. Casino couldn't have drawn it up any better, I don't think. I was 19 years old. I probably had $40 or $60 in my pocket. My daughter had just been born. I was completely broke, right? But I decided I wanted to go check out the casino, and I managed to get in it with the fake ID. And yeah, I didn't know what I was doing in there, but I sat down at some random double diamond machine. And after a handful of spins, I lined up three symbols on the pay line, right? And the
plan worst is, thing that can happen.
I know. The story gets better. Anyways, I was playing one quarter. It spit out $200. I felt like I was rich. And then I sat down at one of the tables. It was a blackjack table. It had some kind of side bet. The dealer was telling me what to do. And I don't even know what side bet it was. It had to do with how many sevens I had. And sure enough, I got a bunch of sevens and won a little more, right? So
this is easy.
Yeah, easy game, right? And then I went on to do nothing but lose for several visits after that. But the first one was successful, right?
But at some point you decided, I don't want to be a sucker anymore, right?
Well, that took a little while. Being broke, I didn't have a lot of opportunities to go.
Being broke with a family.
Right.
It's different than being broke.
Yeah. I mean, people need food, right? Health insurance, things like that.
Wives and kids kind of like to eat.
Yes, they do. And, but poker started to get real big in my mid-20s.
Online poker?
It was online poker, and the World Series was on TV, and, you know, every channel had a poker tournament on it, it seemed like. And they stood up a bar poker league back home, right? You would go into the bar, you'd order a couple of beers, you'd play Texas Hold'em for free, basically. And if you won, you'd, you know, maybe get a gift certificate to the restaurant or an entry into a quarterly tournament of champions. And if you won that tournament, you would get a seat in a World Series qualifying tournament out in Las Vegas. First place was a seat at the $10,000 entry to the main event, right? So I made it to that Binion's tournament. We had a drive out to Las Vegas to do that. And I guess that was really the first time it crossed my mind that I could gamble and actually win. Not that I made it into the World Series or anything like that, but it was that trip that I figured out there were at least a poker game I could beat.
Were these bar games legal?
Yeah, they were legal. There was no money to be won at the games. You'd maybe get, you know, a $20 gift certificate or something. If you would win the thing, you would, they'd hand out little prizes like, you know, a card guard or something like that. But anytime there was actually a monetary prize that wasn't a gift certificate to the restaurant, I guess that didn't count as monetary. I don't know the laws. But they were certainly never rated, right? The monetary value, the entries to anything that was actually had some cash value occurred in Las Vegas.
Okay, so you got to Las Vegas.
So I got to Las Vegas. We didn't have any money. A buddy of mine came along with me, right? We got in his BMW. It had a license plate on it, said pay me. We got pulled over in Oklahoma. They just wanted to see what in the hell we were doing. It was a good time. You know, we got in at about 1 o'clock in the morning. Couldn't check in till 3 in the afternoon the next day. So we just started partying, right? And that lasted a while and I got tired and I needed to take a nap in the car. So I went in the Binion's garage where the car was parked and took a
good
little nap.
Good safe place to go take a nap.
Well, absolutely. And downtown was way different then, right? Like now I feel like it's pretty clean. But at the time, you know, you could stub your toe on a needle down there, right? Somehow or another, I survived it. And I got up in the morning and, you know, I'm sure I smelled awful. And I entered their daily AM tournament, right? Their daily morning tournament. And I did pretty good. I think we got down to the last three players and we decided to chop it up. So here I am at, you know, 24-ish, a fistful of chips. I slept 3 hours in the last, you know, day and a half, right? And I just, it felt awesome, right? The tournament itself for the World Series seed, I mean, it went okay. I finished top third, but nowhere close to actually winning the seat. The played in another tournament. Tournaments were all I really knew.
At this point, did you start studying? Did you pick up books or what? Did you have a plan or you were just winging it?
I was winging it. You know, try and get a bunch of money in when I had cards, try and get money in when, you know, I was in good position, right? But no, I wasn't buying books. I wasn't reading books at the time. I had just kind of played and had a feel for the game, and I knew how to beat grandma. You know what I mean? You know, there was a Binion's Poker Classic at the time, right? Six-handed tournament, two floors of tables, played all day into the evening and lost right before the bubble, like. I'm like, I got to figure something else out. But that's when I really found 3-6 Limit. It was Fitzgerald's at the time, the D now. The poker room was where the high limit slot area is. And it was just a drunken mess of a game. Weakest room I have ever seen. And
had you gotten sleep at all? Or are we still on 3 hours over the past 3 days?
Oh, no, I had slept somewhere in between there. I didn't think that was a very exciting detail, but I'll try and add it into my stories moving forward. The yeah, that was great. I mean, people just, I mean, they played loose. They were throwing action out there all over the place. And I'd never seen limit before. So it was real, even if you made a mistake, you didn't get hurt very bad because you made a mistake with one bet, right? So, you know, I'd win. I won enough to eat something and stay another night at Binion's, right? And then I go back there the next day, and I went enough to stay another night and eat something, right? And I continued that till I almost lost my job, and eventually I went home.
And so what was the point where you decided I'm going to start taking this seriously and trying to make money at it?
That came a little later, you know. I would go play the limit games at home or the cash games at home, 1, 2, 3, 6, stuff like that. And you know, I'd play in the mornings, the old man poker games is what I called them, where the guys just like sitting there and killing a few hours in the morning and catching up with each other. They're not good players, but
usually all very tight.
Yeah, but you know, there's usually some bonuses there in the morning, busted bullets, the high hands reset. So you've got some opportunities in there. And if you, I don't know that I'd say they're exceptionally tight. Nobody is folding for $3, right? So,
Grandma might.
Grandma might. But, you know, funny enough, where I really found something that I was going to try and do was when I made a trip to Las Vegas, and it was probably in my 30s, late 30s, and discovered three-card poker. Got sick of losing on slot machines, right? Going to try a table game.
Now, how did you discover three-card poker?
I was just walking through a casino and sat down and didn't know how to play. And I typed in three-card poker strategy on my phone, and up comes the Wizard of Odds website, right? And I'm like, oh, someone's working on this.
But still, were you a singing dealer's hold card?
No.
So even with Wizard of Odds, you're a couple percent down.
Absolutely a couple percent down. But I found Wizard of Odds. So I read the whole site.
Nobody can read
the whole site.
Well, it felt like I read the whole site. Yeah. But, you know, I'm like, oh, you can count cards. Oh, you can hold card. Oh, you can play video poker. And that's when I really started to learn games, trying to sharpen things up.
And so what was your first foray into trying to play with an edge then? I mean, yes, you were playing poker with an edge, but...
Well, maybe I was. Maybe I wasn't. Yeah, well, I felt like I made more than I lost. Poker's a real hard game to kind of quantify whether you have an edge or not.
It's
kind of squishy, in my opinion. If there's a way to do it, I don't know what it is. But the first
Keeping
thing
records is a good way to start.
I do that, thank you. And card counting was the first thing I tried. You know, so, you know, I started just, I read the three articles Rome's posted. I read, I think Jacobson put it up on AP Heat, had a decent little overview. And then I got a deck of cards and I just started counting them down. And then I got a shoe and started dealing myself games at the kitchen table. And once I felt like I was competent at it, wasn't great, but I keep the count and play. I said, well, let's give it a shot.
And what happened?
It was okay. I mean, you know, I didn't have much of a bankroll. I think I was playing 6-deck shoes for red chips. I was spreading from 10 to 70. I won a little, not much, but it became apparent pretty quick. I was betting a lot to win a little, right?
Yep.
And it just wasn't fun, right? And I'm thinking, and if I have two beers, forget about it, right?
But the beers are free.
Well, not in Missouri, they're not.
Oh, okay. So you have to pay to lose your edge.
You're right. Which makes it less fun. That's when I come out here, I feel like 3 months fall off my life because I drink so much, but I've got to get that under control. But then I moved on after blackjack to video poker. Did some of the wizard stuff. Read your book, Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner. Very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for writing it. You know, was playing that when I could go earn a gift card and have a few bucks in value. Did not like...
Did they have mailers in Missouri the way they do out here?
They do, absolutely. They were good for a little while until Boyd took over and Penn caught on to me. So yeah, my mailers are not good right now.
Anyway, so you started playing video poker.
Yeah. So, I learned jacks are better first. Then I started working on deuces games. I had access to, not so ugly ducks or not so ugly deuces. I'm not sure what the right way is to say that. So I learned that one over full pay deuces wild. Then I learned 10-7. Double bonus and triple double bonus last. And that's about all I really know.
Is 10-7 double bonus useful to know in Missouri?
No, but I like playing it here. You know, Boyd gives me rooms. You know, so I like going down to Main Street just to kill time. And they give you a $2 scratch card, right, when you hit your four of a kind. And, you know, even if you're playing jacks or better at the bar with the free beers, right? I mean, you're at like 99.9-something-ish with an extra $2 on quads.
Assuming the beers are neutral to your performance.
Well, yeah, at some point when you can't tell an ace for a four, you got to take a nap.
So, how's your wife feel about all this? Is she understanding? Is she pissed as hell and not going to take it anymore? What?
My wife likes gambling. She isn't really into you know, seeking an edge. She likes going in and playing a slot machine or throwing a few cards around at a table game, right? But
well, can't you just point her to which slot machines to play?
Oh, yeah. So, I've sat her at Mini Harley's. I'm like, just spin it until it goes off, right?
Right. So this is the point I wanted to get to. It's clear from your... First of all, we haven't mentioned that yet, that you have a blog. And what's the website for the blog?
Easy Advantage Play... Let me try that again. EasyAdvantagePlay.com. All spelled out, not easy, but E-A-S-Y, right?
Okay, and so it's clear from, you're very active on Twitter, and it's clear from that and your blog that at some point you transitioned over into playing slots, which a lot of people have moved into that area. So how did that transition happen?
Again, reading Wizard of Vegas, right? People were posting about Ultimate X, and I'm like, well, I've got those machines. Missouri isn't like Las Vegas, right? There are not a million machines out there. I'm exaggerating. There are a few machines, right? So I read about one. I saw one. And it worked. I was now betting a little and winning relatively a lot compared to what I was betting, right? And I like that. I also like...
Now, were you just betting when people left multipliers unplayed?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you weren't playing from scratch.
No, I hate that game from scratch. It's wild.
Oh, yes.
I've heard the Bob Dancer story about Ultimate X. Where was I going with that story?
So you were playing Ultimate X.
You started with Ultimate X.
Yeah.
It's the gateway drug.
I know, right? And you know, I wanted to understand how to quantify it. I didn't want to just do it because, you know, people would say things like, oh, I hear you shouldn't play a 2X on a 10 play, right? And I'm like, what's the right answer to that? And I could go by what someone said, but the math wasn't hard at all to figure out, right? Well, that's
so 10% edge. So multiplied by the style of the game. So if it was a 96% game, but you get a 10% edge, you're betting.
Yeah, you got 11 plays. 11, you're divided by 10. The 10 coins you're betting, right?
And that's a big edge.
It's a piece of cake, right? And it's even better if you find it on a 3-play. And but anyways, that got me into like a trust but verify sort of mindset, right? Somebody gives you a what did the wizard just write? Ocean Magic, right? A bubble on the third row is good. Well, I would sure like to keep track of what happens when I spin that thing with a bubble on the third row? And it doesn't take any time to just jot it down on your little notes app on your phone, right? And then go throw it in a spreadsheet when you get home, and becomes apparent pretty quick.
So your first game was Ultimate X, and where did, what did you discover or read about next? What was your next game? I guess your first actual slot game.
The Ocean Magics, the Golden Egypts, right? That information was readily out there that you could go figure those out really quick. Where I really started having some fun with it is when I found games that you could actually move some coin through. The Harleys were a good example of that. Those are definitely on their way out, but yeah.
So for our listeners who aren't into the Harley game, give a radio-friendly explanation of what you do when you find a Harley game.
Oh, sure. So they're a spin banking game, right? You catch a symbol in the fifth row, and it adds an extra free spin when the bonus event is triggered. So, the trick of the game was to figure out what those free spins were worth and how much the game was going to take from you while you were waiting for those free spins to occur, and just wait for the balance to swing into your favor.
So what are you measuring? What are you looking for?
I would keep track of the start values of the game, how many spins I took, the amount of coin in I ran through it, when I triggered a bonus, how many spins I got, and what that bonus value was. Then I'd put all that information into a spreadsheet and just pivot out the value of a spin, how much the main game's dropping me, the frequency of the bonus event being triggered, how fast the meter's running, i.e. how many spins I had to take or how much coin I had to put in to bank another spin. And you get a bunch of decimal points you can add up to get an expected return from the machine.
You're possibly on purpose, but you're not giving us the formula of what you're looking for.
I think everybody's got it at this point anyways, right? I was at a Wizard of Vegas meetup, first one of those I went to over the Super Bowl. And I was talking to a couple of guys. And, we were talking about the Harleys a little bit, like it's a popular question. So what do you do? Right. And, you want to tell them a little, but not everything. Right. And they're like, oh yeah, I follow you on Twitter and look at the spreadsheet I've got. And I said, that's my calculator spreadsheet. And you could verify it was mine.
Because how did it get out there? Or did you put it out?
Oh, I sent it to a couple of people.
Oh, okay.
And I assume a couple of people sent it to a couple of people until everybody had it. Now, I don't think making a spreadsheet to calculate these plays was, particularly slick. But there was some weirdness with those Harleys and the way the Mega worked. I still don't have the answer to it. If you counted the Mega symbols, you would think that game would have triggered megas more frequently than it actually triggered megas, right? So I didn't really know what to do, but I took the conservative approach to it, and I set that meter speed at about half the value of what most people set their meter speed at for the megas. So if you just throw in what your pure mega play number is, I'm going to get a slightly different number than, say, Mickey would have given, right?
I've heard a number of people who just ignore the mega and just base it off the...
Well, that would be some of the best Harley advice I could give everyone, is to just ignore the mega. On one of the two of the blog posts that I did, on one of them, it was really funny. I ran a statistical regression on some early data just to kind of show how I did it. And the mega value was actually negative. So I had to change my hypothesis because the statistic said the mega costs me money and doesn't earn me money, right? So, yeah, that was my first clue to ignore megas. But I will play megas in a either-or sort of situation, meaning where there's enough value in the maxi or the mini to make the... with what's in the mega to be positive. You might call that taking a shot. I'm not afraid to take a swing and lose a few bucks.
You have equity from several different places, and if it adds up, it adds up.
It adds up, right. Right. And I'm waiting for, I'm trying to get lucky, basically. I'm going to lose that play, you know, 8 out of 9 times. Well, that 9th time, I'm getting all my money back, right?
Right. Yeah, you have positive EV.
Yeah.
But so what's the, I hear that some of these Harley plays can go for many, many hours. What's the longest you've been stuck on a Harley?
3.5, 4.5 hours, sort
of.
That's
not bad.
No, it wasn't too bad. I was chasing a Maxi that ran out to 100 and I don't know how many spins, too damn many. I was sick of spinning that thing. And it was funny, my wife was going to meet me, right? And my Maxi's running long, and I'm like, I can't get up. So I leave my phone in the car. So, you know, I'm like, hey, slot tech, can you hold this machine just for like 10 minutes? I need to go get my phone, right? And they held it for me, and eventually it hit. And it wasn't that bad of a loss, funny enough. But yeah, I saw a guy chasing a Mega once. It was, you know, 11 o'clock at night or something, and he was still there at 7 o'clock in the morning when I went back, right? Not for me.
So obviously you have some kind of a stats background. What is your background?
I got my degree in economics and business. They required me to take basic statistics all the way up through econometrics. Econometrics is where I learned about doing regression analysis, which has been semi-useful. You know, it was funny when I was just getting started on Wizard of Vegas. One of the things I posted about was, well, why couldn't I do that with a regression analysis? And when everyone ignored me, I knew I was on to something.
Why?
That sentence doesn't make sense
to
me.
Yeah, why did you know you were onto something?
I mean, if Rome's or somebody who is pretty knowledgeable, they have some math savvy people there.
Well, and I would think that the wizard himself would have answered that question.
May not have seen it,
but you know, I feel like they're a little tight-lipped on that board, and I was relatively new. More than a fair number of folks from that board have recommended I be a little more quiet.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was, look, it was a guess. It was me just inferring that if I was onto something that might be useful, they might not want to talk about it on a permanent board out there in public, which is why Twitter is nice.
Yeah. Because
things get lost in the wash on Twitter.
Right. On blackjack boards, usually at that point, somebody would private message you. Right. Somebody would ask a question that showed they obviously knew something, and then they would private message you. And actually, for me, that was a way that I made really great contacts, was starting to talk to people off the board because I would see something they would post that let me know they were not. Because the vast majority of people on these forums are not very knowledgeable, to say the least.
Yeah, but I worked through my regression analysis in a blog post, right? And you know, it wasn't right. It was close on the mini. It really inflated the break even value of the Maxi, but it you know, it was a gut check with 10,000 spins to say, am I in the neighborhood, right? And so, you know, that was good enough for me for where I was at. I mean, I'm just trying to extrapolate data, right?
All right. We're talking to Prozima. We're going to take a brief break for commercials and come back and talk about when he found a big error on the Wizard of Vegas site. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. The May promotion of the month is the $500,000 Swipe, Spin, and Win. On Mondays through Thursdays, beginning May 6th, play 300 points between 3 a.m. and 11:30 p.m., spin the wheel. Prizes include free play up to $50, bonus points, or $25 resort cards, or food vouchers. After your play, you stop by the kiosk and spin the wheel. Free play and bonus points go directly onto your card. You'll receive the food vouchers in a ticket that spits out of the kiosk. And for the resort cards, you take the voucher you get out of the kiosk and take it to the club. There will be a $32,000 hot seat promotion on Memorial Day, Monday, May 27th. Every 3 minutes between 8 a.m. and midnight, some player receives $100 in free play. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Spin Poker Deluxe. This looks and plays the same as Spin Poker, except Spin Poker is a 9-line game requiring 45 coins, and Spin Poker Deluxe is a 20-line game requiring 100 coins. The EV and the strategy for this game is the same as a single-line version. We're back talking to Prozima. At one point, you found an error in something you read on The Wizard of Vegas or The Wizard of Oz. What was that all about?
That's when I was learning to count cards, right? One of the features out there on Wizard of Vegas was a card counting trainer where it would keep count of the cards while you were counting the cards, and you could, you know, uncover the running count on the thing and you'd see if you're keeping count accurately or not, right? So, you know, that was just one of the tools I was using to make sure I was doing it right. And I was disturbed when I found that I wasn't, according to that counter simulator. So I started looking at it and watching it and recording it and trying to figure out where I made my error to go back and correct myself. And as it turns out, the simulator was making an error. It was putting a magic +2 in, and I don't remember exactly what the conditions were, but I think it was a condition where the dealer had blackjack and it would throw an extra one on there in the running count, right? So I hit the contact us button on Wizard of Vegas and Wizard of Odds, I'm sorry, and I asked the question, and somebody got back to me and said, well, that would be a great question for our Wizard of Vegas forum. So I said, okay, I'll go post on the Wizard of Vegas forum. So I signed up for an account and said, hey, here's what I think your card counting simulator is doing, and you know, wrote a post on there, and you know, Rome's replied pretty quickly and a few other people did, and they didn't believe me. So I you know, went to go post my video, and I didn't have enough posts to throw links out there, so then I went and made 4 or 5 garbage posts somewhere to get enough where I could post a link, and then I didn't know how to post the link, and figured all that out. But as it turns out, it was absolutely right. They notified JB on the board, and he did whatever he does with his computer code to go fix the thing. But, you know, I felt like that was maybe one of my first contributions to something. I was not wrong. I thought I was losing my mind. I thought I couldn't count. As it turns out, the simulator was wrong, and it wasn't me. I was doing it right. Right. So yeah, that was fun. And that was also a significant event just because it drove me to Wizard of Vegas. And you know, then I am like, oh, look at all these other people that I can bounce ideas off of and say too much, and they can tell me to be quiet.
So, you started making contacts within the other Advantage Play community, I mean, outside of just the board?
Yeah. I've met several of them in real life. A good number of them are people that I only interact with online. I enjoy meeting them, right? But yeah, when I, you know, when I come out here, when I travel, I, you know, I just reach out to people that I know are in the area, and I'm like, hey, you know, you want to go have a beer? I'd be happy to meet you guys, right? And I say hi, and, you know, I try and be helpful and nice. And
has that led to sort of mutually beneficial trading of information?
To some extent, yeah. You know, it depends on the individual, right? You've got to be careful out there is what I found. There are a number of people that just, you know, want to bounce ideas or trade some information. And then there are a number of people out there that want to sell you something, and it may be crap or it may not be crap, right?
Or they just want information without giving anything up in return.
Well, and there's plenty of that. I'm really hesitant to do any sort of real team plays, though. I hear too many stories of, oh yeah, he was helping me spin off the 10,000 must hit, and I went to go take a nap or, you know, you eat lunch, and there goes the slot ticket, right? I don't know that I'm ready for all that.
No. Trading of information is one thing. Sharing bankrolls is another.
Yeah, it feels like a big step. Like, you really have to trust that person.
So one of the things I find really interesting is, and maybe you can walk us through it, on your blog, you talk about how you approach a brand new machine or a machine that you're not familiar with, and how you go about analyzing whether that machine is something that may be able to provide a play or not. You want to walk us through the data that you gather to?
Yeah, I think I use an example of an inflated jackpot on my my blog, right? I never really paid any attention to that machine. It doesn't bank spins or coins or bubbles or anything fun like that, right? But here's what happens in Missouri. You go walking through a casino and there's absolutely nothing to do, so you just start looking at everything. And one of the things I noticed is that here's a machine that has $1,200 top line on one side, and here's one $40,000 right next to it, right? So what I was hoping had occurred is that some machine got taken down and they had to do something with the jackpot, and they stuck it up there. So I was looking for the top pay light symbols to occur more frequently than they should for a jackpot that size, right? So all I really needed to know is what the base game was taking from me, and how frequently the top pay line symbols were occurring, right? So the base game's easy enough. You know, you put a ticket in, you start betting, you keep track of how many spins you put in, and players' cards are good for keeping track of the number of spins you take, because they display the points right there on the screen, and so many points are so many dollars coin in are worth the point, right? Learned that from doing video poker, right? To keep track of stuff. And then you've got to start counting how often those symbols occur in the different reels. You're trying to do a little bit of a reel map where you're keeping track of, this is a symbol that matters to me, versus it's not a symbol that matters to me. So I'm not trying to do the wizard's trick of completely simulating the game. I'd love to learn how to do that, but I don't know how to do it as I sit here today. But I can approximate, here's the frequency of the symbol appearing on reel one. Here's the frequency of the symbol appearing on reel two. And here's the frequency of the symbol appearing on reel three. And then it's just a math problem. How many lines are in play if I've got to line them up?
But can't that be quite costly, gathering the data?
Well, it certainly can. I was not playing the machine at max bet where I actually had a chance to take down the jackpot. It was more of an exercise that I was looking for something grossly wrong with the frequency, right? It's almost like if I was sitting at a video poker machine and I was counting the frequency of hearts to figure out how many times I was getting a flush, because I had a royal jackpot on that flush, right? It was going to be real apparent real quick if I was dealing with something that occurs every 100 hands versus something that occurs every 40,000 hands.
I
wasn't looking
you
for
had a hypothesis going in.
Yeah.
And so you were just looking to verify where you're going to find that much quicker.
And the truth of the matter is, Richard, is that that game may very well have been 1 or 2% positive, but I wasn't going to sit there for 10 or 12 or 14 hours for 1 or 2%, sure. Right? That wasn't appealing to me. If what I would have found is that the frequency said that thing's worth 35% and I'm going to take it down in about 3 hours, I'd have been like, okay, let's go.
Right.
If two identical, apparently identical machines next to each other, 1,200 and 40,000 as the progressive meter, my gut feeling is sit down and start playing, whether you understand it or not. Because I'm not familiar with how to do the mapping that you're talking about. But if it's the same machine, one has a meter of, one has a progressive of 1,200, one is 40,000, very, very high percentage chance that it's positive.
Yeah, I mean, that does seem, I mean, you could have a situation where it's not, and the machine at 1,200 was just brought in and put on the floor and hadn't been there long. I mean, you don't know, but it does seem that that would be an awful low starting point for a jackpot that's going to get that high or higher.
Yeah, I sat down and I'm like, does anybody know anything about this game, right? Anybody? And like, I was on my own, right? So,
yeah. Do you ever, sit behind other people playing machines and just gather the data watching them play? Doesn't cost you?
Yeah, I've done that before too. I did that with the Wonder Four wheel or Wonder Four jackpots. I forget the name. It was one of these four slot games you play at the same time, and there was a jackpot on each of those slot games. And the word on Twitter was that it was positive when it got to $500, right? And I thought, well, okay, that sounds great, except I tried it and I lost pretty bad. And I tried it again and I lost pretty bad. And I said, I'm just going to watch some people play and see if I can get some frequencies on that wheel that says, do you win the jackpot or do you get regular free games or do you get super free games? And I'm thoroughly convinced that that game is not positive when it's at $500.
We meant 5,000. I'm really sorry for the mistake.
Yeah. It seems that after some period of time, though, you would get to know when one person says something, it is going to have a lot more weight than if somebody else said something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, there's one guy on Twitter, and I won't call out his name, but pretty much everything he's told me has either been wrong or very clearly delivered from someone else. And then there are other people out there. If I see a number that Mickey's put out, for example, I believe Mickey, right?
Mickey Krim?
Yeah, Mickey Krim.
Who was on our show very recently.
Yeah, he's scary good, right? I mean, I look through his Twitter posts and I'm like, how does he know how to play this many games, right?
It's a lot of games.
I mean, know. Like, his spreadsheet must be amazing, right? He's light years ahead of me.
And what's interesting is he's close to 60, and he said he's been sober for over a year. But he was a significant alcoholic for a long time, and that's got to pickle your brain. And it's still, he's just really sharp.
He's incredibly sharp, but I have to tell you, I don't want to be that guy that is just sponging off of Mickey, right? That's why I wanted to figure out how to do my own analysis on these games at some point or another. Mickey's going to retire, or he's going to stop posting, and I don't want that to be the end of my hobby, right?
Right, right.
James Gross Gene, Exhibit CAA.
Yeah.
You have a story about that.
Yeah, most unbelievable thing. So I'm sitting there on Twitter one day, and somebody sends me a private message that says, do you want a copy? And I'm like, well, it's very kind. What do you want for it? And he's like, well, just give me your email address. I'll just send it to you. I said, okay, what did I do to earn it? Right. And he goes, I like your tweets. He actually asked me to go down to a casino local to me and see if there was a dealer flashing down there, during the day, which I did. It took me a little while because I worked during the day, right? But I made the run down there. But that's the last I ever heard from the guy, right? So I you know, it was a scanned copy, very readable. And I printed it out and I put it in a binder and I read it. And, you know, you're going through these chapters and you're like, oh, man, integral calculus. I forgot how to do that. It's been a while since I took that class. Guess yeah. I should go read an article on integral calculus. But no, it's great stuff. I mean, I feel bad for James that, you know, his work is being tossed around like that, right?
Yeah.
So you know, James, I probably owe you $100 or something.
He sells them for $250 if you can get them from him.
Well, I know that's the story, right? And again, look, and
there's a whole lot of people who want to buy them that he won't sell them to.
He doesn't have them anymore. I mean, he did not print many copies, and they sold out immediately. And it's not like, you know, I think if he has any copies left, it's probably less than a dozen.
And I'm sure I don't rate. You know what I mean?
But reprinting is not that tough.
Oh, yeah. No, but he doesn't want to sell more of them.
Yeah, I asked him and he goes, well, I have an error in the fourth digit on this chart on page 132 that as long as that's in there, I feel real, it's not perfect, so I don't want to give it out. And I'm going, in the fourth decimal point on page 132 is probably not going to be very important to me, and he knows that. But that was interesting.
Yeah, you know, I don't rate. You know what I mean? I'm the new guy. I've only been doing this the 3 years ish, and you know, I play relatively small most of the time. I'm sure there are those books are for more powerful people than me. I'm honored to have a copy, though. Thank you, whoever sent it to me.
The you had a Mississippi stud strategy that you created your own paint, no paint strategy, and then presumably you saw exhibit CAA.
You know, it's pretty easy to tell when you've got a bad strategy, right? Because you you lose with it. But, you know.
Especially if you're losing in that game. Something's wrong.
Yeah. You know, I make a fair number of mistakes, right? And I try and learn from the mistakes. But getting a copy of that book certainly helped me understand where my mistake was and how I could improve upon it. You know, the real problem with Mississippi Stud is that, you know, the dealers have been trained, and you know, when you do get a glimpse of a card, sometimes it isn't a very good glimpse. You know, and the stuff that was publicly available online that I could find, you know, Jacobson had some stuff, and there was another website that had some whole card information on Mississippi Stud, but it certainly didn't have the partial read strategies in it, right? So, yeah, you know, it.
So you created your own paint strategy, and then you saw in the book that yours was incorrect. Is that what happened? Or
yeah, I was. You know, I'm sitting there looking at it and I'm like, okay, so if I've got two paint cards, there are that many left in the deck, and I know his card's a paint card, so what do I do, right? And whatever it was I was doing, I think I was betting two, was not the right way to bet. And then I was reverting back to basic strategy at some point or another. And it wasn't the right way to play.
Mm. One time at a Wizard of Vegas meetup, you hooked up with Rome's and Bruce. Now, they've been on our show, both Richard and I respect them. How did that change your life at all?
Oh, no, they were nice guys, right? I mean, we didn't go out and do any plays or anything like that. I think I may have mentioned earlier, right, what I really learned from those guys is that they're sitting there with my Harley calculator on their phone, right? And I didn't give it to them. So it was kind of a lesson on you know, how information gets around.
Sort of like James's book.
Sort of like James's book. Of course, I sure put nowhere near what James put into to creating that book, but still, right? It got out there, and I got a kick out of the fact that they had my calculator. You know, being a new guy, right? Looking at you guys getting to meet Rome's and Bruce, it's kind of like meeting a celebrity. You know what I mean? Like, I've got your book sitting on my shelf, you know?
So you didn't bring it for me to autograph it for you?
No, I didn't, but I should have thought of that.
It's okay. I got a sore wrist anyway.
but no, they were very nice guys. I enjoyed talking to them, and I drank a fair amount at that party. I lost the money to a poker pro. Just check the boxes.
Had a good time.
Had a good time.
Is there beatable gambling close to where you live?
A little bit, yeah. There are a few machines. This is not Las Vegas. Missouri is not Las Vegas. I guess counting was kind of nice because they won't back you off there, and they really don't care. I was out in a casino.
Oh, they care. Trust me, they care. If you're betting enough, they care.
Yeah, maybe I just wasn't betting enough, right? But, I was at a casino in Kansas City, and I shared this story with you before we started, right? But, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm playing blackjack, and here comes two women sitting down at the table, one younger, one older, and the younger lady goes, hey, to the dealer, can you slow down a little bit? My mom's just learning to count cards. And the dealer goes, sure. And I'm like, okay, here we go. You know, so, that was neat. It was red chip table. I wasn't, trying to turn the lights out or anything. I was just having a good time playing a little bit. I had a weekend away from the kids, and, you know, why not, right?
Yep.
Wonder how many dealers would do that.
Well, I can tell you, there are a lot of dealers who would tell you something, you know, ridiculous, like, oh, you know, that's illegal. I mean, literally, they will tell you, that's illegal. And you try to explain to them that it isn't, and, you know, but some boss or somebody told them that it was.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea, really, to argue with a dealer in any situation.
Yeah.
I mean, if they've paid you wrong, maybe that's the situation where you want to argue with them. But if what you're doing is a problem to the dealer, I find the best move is just to leave.
Yeah. No, I agree.
You know, the last thing I want to do is be thrown out of a casino if I can avoid it. I have yet to be thrown out of one with
your
one
day
exception.
Will come, especially if there's only two or three places close to you and you keep going back there.
Although playing slots, you're going to last a lot longer than you would, you know, counting cards or even playing video poker.
I have had them come up to me while I'm in the middle of a play on a slot machine and say, now, you know, you shouldn't pay full price for that buffet the way you're paying. Just go up to the host and they'll give you blah, 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 you know, and okay. It's so different than the stories that I hear. Las Vegas is so different.
Are you playing with a card?
Usually, depending on what I'm doing, if I'm poking through Ultimate X machines on my lunch hour, right? No, I'm not playing with a card. I would rather them not see the win for the low coin in. And, I mean, what am I really going to get out of it other than a lower average daily, right? When I was playing the Harleys, I was definitely using the card. I was running a ton of coin in through those things. But yeah, you know, a lot of times, you know, I've got my office 5 minutes in one direction is a casino, and then 10 minutes in another direction is another casino. So it's not unusual for me to, you know, just eat a sandwich while I'm on a conference call and then go, you know, look through some Ultimate X machines for 45 minutes. And, you know, you check the high denomination ones or the ones that the people don't know how to play, the, you know, the bonus streaks, the moving multipliers, things like that. And there's usually something sitting on it, and you don't get hung up or stuck spinning a Buffalo Diamond or something like that. And you go back to work and, okay, well, that paid for lunch and then some, you know.
Right. I made more at lunch than I did for the day at the office.
That happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans to give up your day job going to gambling?
Maybe. You know, right now I'm making a pretty good living at my day job. I just paid off my house. I'm starting to just sock away money. And, you know, I'd like to get it where I have a very low requirement for gambling, meaning I need to be able to cover my health insurance and some pocket change. All the real bills are covered by money I've got in the bank, right?
You're planning to keep your wife and kids too, though.
I am planning to keep my wife and kids. I like them.
Good. That's good to know.
Yes.
We're about to let you go. Tell us again the name of your blog.
EasyAdvantagePlay.com. I could do a better job keeping that thing updated, but I've been working on Buffalo Diamonds.
And what's your Twitter? Where can people find you on Twitter?
At ProZima. There's an underscore between the pro and the Zima.
Why?
Because someone took ProZima and they won't give me their name and they don't tweet.
Oh dear.
I offered him money and he didn't want it.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.